Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Raiders, review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, the NFL draft is coming, which means all the nonsense. We're going to talk about that cyborg on Jeopardy. And also the latest episode, Baseline, the Supermax. We're going to talk to Bobby Marks about the Supermax contract and some Unblock Me, Bo. Forgot about that. But first... Boy, it's that time of year when we pile on Russell Westbrook. Now, I understand that some of you may believe me to be a Russell Westbrook apologist. I kind of hate that term, apologist. I feel like I need to look up exactly what it means in the dictionary, because I just feel like people throw apologists around a little willy-nilly, ignoring the fact that somehow, okay, but Gabe, you know what apologist, what it says here according to the Oxford American Dictionary?
I was actually just looking it up myself.
Yeah, I got a person who offers an argument in defense of something controversial.
Russ is very controversial.
Yeah, but that ain't such a bad thing, right? Like, it's entirely thrown around as being a pejorative. Nobody ever is like, yo, you're a real Martin Luther King apologist. That's controversial. You know what I mean? But anyway, I get that thrown around at me, and it's difficult for me when I look out and I just be like, yo, man, y'all are tripping. Right. And so if I feel like y'all are tripping and then y'all continue to trip, I have to fight in opposition of the tripping. In reality, I'm trying to keep y'all upright. Right. Y'all tripping, falling down all over yourselves. Here I am right here trying to be like, hey, man, you better watch out. There's a wire you're going to trip on right there. I don't want you to be tripping. Right. And I don't want y'all to be tripping. But see, this is what's happened with Russell Westbrook. In the last 2 years, there has been an undeniable fall in his shooting that has made it such that the ways that people would try to pile on him and say, let's just throw a year out there because this may have been the year he was hurt, but let's say 2015, right? Most of those criticisms at that time, I don't think really applied. Now, ooh, we got a different set of issues here, and it's because his shooting has gotten so bad. When he was just a guy who took bad shots, but wasn't necessarily a terrible shooter, it wasn't such an issue. Now, if you've got a guy who's a bad shooter who also takes bad shots, ooh, buddy, we have a for real deal problem. And what we have seen in these playoffs, with the exception of, I guess, game three, is a guy who falls under the description of somebody who is taking bad shots and not doing so well when he even takes the good shots. So let me give you some numbers that you may find to be helpful. True shooting percentage is a bit of a hodgepodge that I don't fully understand, but I think this will help you. In 2016, his true shooting percentage was 55.4. Right, 5.54. They do it the decimal in the front. 2017, the MVP year, 5.54. Last year, 5.24. This year, 5.01. Those are numbers closer to Russell Westbrook in his first year in the NBA. You want to look at field goal percentage. This year, he was at 43%, which is kind of in line overall with where he's been for most of his career. But he's shooting 29% from three, and that's the worst that he shot in 9 years. By comparison, in the MVP season, he shot 34%. And again, the shooting 29% wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing in the world, except he's taking 5.5 threes per game. Okay, now we have a problem. But I still contend, the way that Russell Westbrook is evaluated by the general public is through the lens of what he does not do well, and whatever he does do well gets completely washed away. And that's where I wind up with the pushback against the way that people talk about him, is that it's as though there is no like actual real life positive contribution that he is providing. He is not simply how well he does or does not shoot, but that's what he's reduced to in these times. You look at what that whole team is right now in Oklahoma City, and I ask you this. Who should be taking these shots? Because I think that Westbrook should probably be taking better shots. But who else out there do you think should be taking these shots? Because I've seen a lot of people make the argument that the Thunder are 4-14 since Kevin Durant left in the playoffs. In the playoffs, they're a 4-4 team since Kevin Durant left. Gabe, I looked up at this series they've been playing. They starting Paul George, Steven Adams, Russell Westbrook, Terrence Ferguson, and is that Jeremy or Jerry and Grant? I swear I don't know which is which.
Jeremy Grant.
It is Jeremy Grant. Okay. He the one that went to Syracuse.
I'm not sure where he went. I'll have to look that up.
Like, one of them went to Syracuse. I think one of them went to Notre Dame. I think they both Harvey Grant's sons. And I just don't. I can't tell them apart for nothing, right? Like, you got to give your kids more distinct names than that. Help them out. If you thought they was going to go to the NBA, right? Horace and Harvey, that sounds a lot more different than this. And y'all, they twins.
Jeremy went to Syracuse.
Got it. Zone is for cowards. Anyway, but go look at like what the rosters are. Like the difference between the roster that Oklahoma City has right now versus the roster that they had in 2016 when they almost beat the Warriors, even with adding Paul George, it's pretty staggering. And that goes beyond when you look at like having Kevin Durant. Like you go look at who the other guys were that filled out that roster, it's a different ball game. This team was built with the expectation of a healthy Andre Robertson, whom I call Self-Check. Now, I don't think you need another guy named Self-Check to be out there on the floor with Russell Westbrook, but he is maybe one of the three or four best perimeter defenders in the NBA. Like, you were going to have an elite wing defender in Paul George and an elite wing defender in Robertson, and then they were going to go from there. Now, they don't have him. The dude Abrines, they don't have him anymore. Game 4, they got 46 minutes combined from Terrence Ferguson and Raymond Felton, who is in his 14th year in the NBA.
Still in the league.
He seems to stay on teams, though, that we pay attention to, so I never forget that he's in the NBA. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like when you're on the Knicks, we know that you're in the league, right? You're on the Thunder, we know that you're in the league. Like, I just tend to pop up and be like, oh, Raymond Felton is in a basketball game that I am watching. It ain't like when you turn on the Magic and you're like, hey, DJ Augustine.
Still in the league.
Good for you. Didn't know where you were. Didn't know that there was a where for you to be. Glad for you. But yeah, no, this is where we are. But this is the thing the Thunder got to watch out for, man. They gave Russell Westbrook that Supermax extension because they basically had to. You know, like, if people were down on the Celtics for not giving Isaiah Thomas his $30 million contract after he was physically done for, then what in the world were they going to say about Oklahoma City if they didn't give money to the most loyal man on earth? No. They wound up having to give him that deal. But I've said this even when I was higher on Russ than I am now. Hey, man, when that guy's game starts to slip, it is going to slip all the way. Like, that's not a dude that has a game that's built to age. And if you don't believe me, go look at what happened with Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson averaged 26 points a game in the 2008 season. In the 2010 season, he was basically begging for a job, and the only gig he could get was coming off the bench for the Grizzlies. Right? Because the type of game that he had was not one that was going to age. It was so predicated on athleticism that when the athleticism started to fall, there was nowhere for him to go. The thing with Westbrook is I kind of feel like if he played in the day of Iverson, he might have been able to stick around a little bit longer with the type of game that he has. But the modern NBA prioritizes shooting in a completely different way. And if the slip for Russ is in his shot, this end is going to be very, very bad. Like, in spite of all the injuries and the surgeries and stuff like that, I don't really notice that much of a physical fall off for Russ. And look, this is Russ, what, 11 years in the league? Like, the physical fall, I don't really see. The fall is in shooting. And by the way, it's not just in shooting from the floor. The most staggering and almost inexplicable thing here is that Russell Westbrook, for his whole career, up until 2017, had never shot lower than 78% from the free throw line. He shot 74 last year, and he shot 66 this year. That's the one that I look at, and I'm like, hey, what exactly is going on here? He's also not getting to the line as much as he did in the last couple of years. Like, these are the things to point to. It's not just, damn, Russ be out here taking bad shots. To me, that's the lazy argument in looking at this. Like, man, Kevin Durant left. Now they can't make it out the first round. That's a lazy argument about the totality. Like, it was a lazy argument to me early in Russ's career when people talk about a lot of the shots that he took. Because if you looked out at the offense they were running, there wasn't no shots to take. Like, these cats weren't open. These sets were grinding to a halt. And then next thing you know, we had Russell Westbrook standing at the top of the key with 7 seconds left on the shot clock. Kevin Durant over in this corner being skinny, getting hemmed up. And there's nothing for anybody to do. So he winds up being the guy that takes the shot. Like, these things have happened. Right. But now we've gotten to a point where this has gone on for so long that basically everybody who went too far with it early gets to be right now, because a lot of what they're saying, the broken clock has finally come around to 12:37 or whatever it was on. Right. This is where they are. But I don't know what they do as a franchise. I also don't know how much to take completely out of this series. Paul George, they were talking about what, before, early in the series, the dude couldn't even raise his arm, then got out here to play. He hasn't played well either. And Paul George, by the way, is about to live that Kevin Durant life of, you know, none of it is actually my fault. Y'all remember when we was ridiculing Paul George? Where we said the only time he made a game-winning shot was in that commercial? Because in that commercial at that time, it was the only time he hit a game-winning shot? He's in the playoffs. You remember that? Nah, man, Paul George came over MVP candidate this year. People say Russ won't dial his game back. Russ dialed his game back enough to make Paul George a legitimate MVP candidate. Gabe, have you seen an MVP candidate out here in this series?
No playoff P.
No. And have you heard any real ridicule toward playoff P about this fact?
I have not.
No, I mean, everything goes to Russ. Billy Donovan, what has Billy Donovan demonstrated in terms of being like some great coach? Haven't seen it. He gets to skate in large part behind this because everybody gets to stand behind Russ. Like, no matter how down you are on Russ, you can't deny that fact. Like, I can acknowledge that he's played poorly in this series. I can acknowledge that his shooting has gotten to a point where it is a for real deal problem. That don't so much make me an apologist as much as looking at what's actually out there. I don't know why it's so hard for people to look at what the rest of that team is and not be able to acknowledge, like, hey, man, this from top to bottom, this ain't what we thought it was going to be, right? This isn't it. And so they've come out here against the Blazers, and I think Russ picked the wrong year to tell Dane Lillard that he'd been busting his keister for years, because Dane Lillard seemed to take that personally, Gabe.
Oh, he's salty. He's so salty.
And he's put the hurt on them in this series. Portland, hey, man, if Portland had Nurkic, it's a legitimate reason to believe that they could win the West.
Really? You would go that far?
If they had Nurkic? Like, I think it's easy to look at Nurkic as just some kind of role player, but go look at the numbers that he put up this year. Like, he played all NBA caliber basketball this year. If they had him to go with the way that Dame and CJ are playing, I'm not saying that they would win a championship, right? But I would not put them up against the Warriors and just think the Warriors are going to walk in five or something like that. Some things could break and they could have a legitimate chance to win the West. Or put it like this, if we had that Portland team, I think most of us think that the Rockets, even if we don't think they're going to beat the Warriors, we think they could. I think that most of us would say Portland with Nurkic could beat Houston. Hell, I think a lot of us would say Portland without Nurkic could beat Houston. Like, this is not some scrub squad that they're out here playing against. There's a reason one of them's the three and the other one's the six.
There was a point in time, I want to say 3 to 4 years ago, where the Trailblazers could have been like one of the top teams in the West or in, even in the whole league. Then Wes Matthews blows his Achilles, yep, and LaMarcus Aldridge leaves.
Yeah, and then they built it around something else, right? Like, they were in the process of building that around Dame, which is in part why LaMarcus Aldridge doesn't play there anymore. But they got a decent setup with the guys that they have. Like, do we think that Oklahoma City has a more talented roster than Portland does?
No, and when you're looking at the two, like we asked before, you know, looking at the Thunder's future and how bleak it looks versus how the Trailblazers' future looks, I mean, Trailblazers' future looks good.
Yeah. Also, the Thunder made one really weird decision to me, which is, why do you get Dennis Schroeder if you already have Russell Westbrook? Because I feel like Schroeder is just a lesser version of Russell Westbrook.
And you still got to pay him, too.
Yeah. Like, I don't feel like you need two Westbrooks. Although, ooh, that's how they got Melo out of there, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. It's funny how somebody was trying to tell me with Westbrook, it's always somebody else's fault. And they're like, yeah, last year was Melo's fault. Dog, what, Melo ain't in the league right now. You know what I'm saying? Like Melo's not even here at the moment. And I've been a Melo defender in a lot of ways, too, because I think he became an easy target. But come on, man. He ain't even he is not even in the NBA.
Well, he kind of was. He was on tour this year.
Yeah, I mean, he was at NBA games.
He was doing the One Last Dance tour. He had VIP passes.
Yeah, he did it on the front row. Like, that was his tour around the league. But I'm going to give you some numbers, though, on Russell Westbrook that should give you some concerns. He's got the third highest usage rate in Florida James. Thank you for this. Third highest usage rate in postseason history, by the way, in case you're curious. Russ goes for his shots. But in the clutch in the regular season, the MVP season, he had 247 points that year. It was a plus 85. The last 2 years combined, 294 with a minus 8. He shot 45% in the clutch in that MVP season, 39% in the year since. And, oh, by the way, per 36 minutes, including the playoffs, with Paul George on the floor, Russ does dial it back. He's at 23 points per game, 36 minutes, 23 points, 19.5 field goal attempts, 44% field goal percentage, 33% usage rate, positive plus minus. When Paul George is off, he's averaging 28 points per 36 minutes, 25 field goal attempts, 41%, a 39% usage rate, but this is the killer part, minus 3 in the plus or minus. He's better when Paul George is off the floor. They're better when Paul George is on, which also speaks to Paul George kind of got to bring it. He does. Oh, by the way, Gabe, on those stats about Paul George and the clutches, this season he's 4-for-8 for go-ahead field goals in the last 10 seconds. Before that, 0-for-14.
Because, like you said, he can stand behind Russ.
Yeah, man. He's got it. I mean, like, they have a Russ problem, but I don't think that Russ is the problem. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense.
Like, I'm not in a place where I think that what's going on with Russ is totally not correctable, because he has changed the way he's played since Paul George got there. You just got to – somehow Russell Westbrook has to tell himself, just because I make these shots in practice don't mean I'm going to make these shots right now. But if that happens, is what's about to happen to Oklahoma City, basically teams are just going to pack in the lane? Like, are we asking him just to go into the teeth of the defense every time? Like, he's going to have to, and it's hard for me to believe that a guy at this age can just magically do this, but he is going to have to become, at the very least, a credible jump shooter, because now he is not a credible jump shooter. That being said, Brooke Lopez just became a credible jump shooter, so maybe it can be done. Draft time. I hate the draft. How you feel about the draft, Kate?
I'm not a huge draft fan. Just even saying the word draft, I'm not a huge fan.
We're almost here. What's it, on Thursday?
This is correct.
Kyler Murray is going to be the first overall pick.
There's some movement. Some kerfuffle, if you will.
Yeah, see, I mean, he's going to be the first overall pick. Like, I don't see much way around that. I'm curious to see what they ultimately do with Josh Rosen. Because, look, man, this is what all this stuff is. All them things y'all been reading about the different players and all of that, it's all just to set up a television show. And the television show is the draft. So Josh Rosen is going to be a big character in this draft, I imagine. Somebody's going to wind up making a move for him, because the Cardinals are going to need to trade him before the draft, because you have more suitors if you do this before the draft, you know, because then teams will take people, whatever it is. There's going to be Dwayne Haskins, who, if I was him, I would not show up to that draft. As Geno Smith, bruh, you might wind up in there all night. You don't want that. I would not be there if I was him. I wouldn't be in there if I was that Daniel Jones cat. Didn't Haskins say he's not going?
I'm not sure.
I'd never show up to the draft. Ever. Can't kick it like you want to. Like, how you supposed to be celebrating something that happened to you, but people all up in your face? That's not what it is. Nah, go take that to the crib. And don't be like that one dude that got caught with that tater right there next to his leg while he was celebrating being drafted. But no, I'd never be there. No way in the world. Joe Thomas, I remember he got drafted. He went fishing. That's the right call. Because being there ain't going to get you drafted no sooner. All you get for being there is the privilege of shaking Roger Goodell's hand. Do you want to shake Roger's hand? Like, hey, is that the happiest moment of your life? Do you want to spend that with Roger Goodell?
Me personally, no. I mean, I don't know if you're a player, if you're going to go in for the lawyer, or you're going to go in for the dap. That's a...
Y'all see, Raj practices his dap, right? He puts a lot of work in on the dap. But I imagine, I bet Raj hands be wet when he dap you up for the draft. And wet dap is the worst.
Wow, wet. Why is that? Just sweaty hands?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine he's got to be real nervous about getting his dap game proper in front of all those people. In front of millions of people, you got to get your dap game right when dap ain't something you do regularly. I bet he up there sweaty. And I bet them other cats has got sweaty palms, too, because they all nervous about being drafted. Like, what the... They dap make a squishy sound when they get up there to dap up Roger Goodell. Don't nobody want to be involved in squishy dap, even if you're partially responsible. Nobody needs that. Nobody want to be there. No, I wouldn't be at the draft. I don't even really understand how it is that, like, regular people just be going to the draft, just hanging out. For who? For what? That, to me, sounds like too much money to spend for no women to be in the crowd. Like, you notice that when they give that shot of the crowd at the draft, you don't really see no ladies. You see him at the stadium. You don't really so much see him at the draft. And, like, just tens of thousands of dudes? Oh, that's the beginning of all kinds of horror movies. No chance I'm doing that. Anyway, who's the character guy this year, Gabe? Who's getting killed for the character?
Ed Oliver.
He's the one that's getting it?
Yeah, he's the one. The character assassination.
So what are they saying about Ed?
Just that his, like, heart isn't in it and that he's a, like, a cancer to the team.
Here's the thing I find interesting about the idea that he's a cancer to the team. He is the only five-star recruit in the history of five-star recruits to go to a school that was not in one of the power conferences. Literally the only one. You know the story on him going there?
I don't. Indulge us.
So he is from Houston. And when Tom Herman was at U of H, he committed to go there. Tom Herman also hired his high school coach to be on staff when he got him to come to the University of Houston. Okay. And Tom Herman's whole thing was the H-Town takeover. And like he was showing recruits video of the U and he was telling them that we can build in Houston what they built in Miami, which, by the way, is not that crazy of an idea, but that's what he was selling to those guys. Herman stayed 1 year. Herman went to Texas. Herman took the high school coach with him. He did not take Ed Oliver. So can you understand why maybe his heart might not have been in it at U of H?
I can understand.
Yeah, can you see how maybe Ed Oliver might have thought that he was a little bigger than the program? You know why? Because he was too good to be there in the first place. And by the way, it's hard for me to sell me on the argument that Ed Oliver is all about himself and not about the team when they had that incredible talent playing nose tackle at 280 pounds. Like, he's playing out of position in a way that absolutely did not display what he was capable of. Like, Gabe, they talk about how this dude might actually project to be an inside linebacker in the NFL, and they had him playing nose tackle.
Sounds like someone trying to change a QB to a wide receiver.
Yeah, no, that's crazy, but this is less about trying to turn a QB into a wide receiver than it is like seeing an incredible wide receiver throw the ball and be like, yo, have you thought about playing quarterback? Like, he's that level and that caliber of talent, but every year, these scouts always got to have somebody that's just not the right kind of guy for you to have on your team. I don't know about this, da-da-da, and everything else. And this doesn't happen anywhere else. Have you heard of any basketball player that they've ever been like, nah, we ain't going to take him because people don't like him?
Not in my recent memory, too, and not for, like, a legitimate reason, right? Because with Oliver, it's kind of like, you know, he hasn't committed a crime here.
No.
Whereas people who, I would say, in the past, when it comes to the draft, have committed a crime, it's like they fall past the first round, but they still get picked.
I am wondering now if NFL teams are prioritizing their ability to keep players under control more than ever. Like, you think about this Odell Beckham situation and Antonio Brown and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, they're real concerned with having these guys with, like, and to be fair to football teams, I do understand this part, which is the roster has 53 people and they're trying to keep everybody on the same program. That is not easy, right? There are all kinds of factions and everything else. You saw what happened with the Steelers, for example, where it's like the offensive line against Le'Veon Bell, against, you know, all those kinds of things that happen. It is difficult to keep a team all together in one way. Like, so I don't want to act as though there's nothing to the idea that they're trying to get some level of conformity on their roster. I'm just saying they go so hard in the leaks and stuff like that about these guys. And truly, how many guys have really plummeted in the draft because somebody thought he was selfish? Like, who's the dude that we hear about that all of a sudden this dude ain't getting drafted until like the second round because people just thought he was too selfish? Now, if they think you might mess around and go to jail or something like that, okay, we talk about something different. Like, Vontaze Burfict, for example, is a guy who, because of their quote-unquote character stuff, fell completely out of the draft. I contend that the term character needs to be shelved because what they're talking about is not character. What they're talking about is judgment. Do you have good or bad judgment? Right? Do you know a good idea from a bad one? Because Vontaze Burfict, at least as a football player, has no idea the difference between a good idea and a bad one. They ain't even ideas to him. They just stuff to do. And so he goes out there and just does stuff. Right? So I get that. But like Dez Bryant, did Dez Bryant fall in the draft because of these things that people were concerned with him about? I think it's entirely possible in his case. But we never really know. You know why we never really know? Because the notion of draft stock is fiction. That is why we never really know. Oh, I forgot Gabe. Randy Moss. But they was afraid Randy Moss was going to go to jail. What I want to know is, given that putting this stuff in the newspaper doesn't really have much value, if somebody's going to do a character smear on somebody, you can't let that slide anonymously.
That's what people love to do, right? You know, sling mud, so to speak, and then just hide behind the rock.
Yeah, but you got to put somebody's name on if you're going to do this kind of stuff. I don't have any real evidence that when people whisper and put this stuff out there that it has much of an effect in very many cases on truly excellent players, like on the ones that you know about. But as you said, Gabe, the other part too, if you might go to jail, yeah, that's a thing and they are going to be concerned, but what winds up getting in these stories is just more, I don't like that dude.
Exactly.
Like, that's what you get. And by the way, I totally get why Ed Oliver could have been like that at Houston, too. Remember what happened with the jacket? You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And the thing about the jacket was, I actually saw the argument for him taking the jacket off. Like, I got that point, the idea that the jackets are for players. Yeah, okay, I got that, if you wanted to get the jacket off of him. But when Applewhite went and actually did it himself and then didn't even have the courage to turn and face that dude, that tells me that the problems that they were having were way bigger than just Ed Oliver, right? That wasn't the way a grown man comports himself. Didn't Applewhite get fired, too? Because Dana Holgerson has his job. Yeah, they sent him out of their pack. Anyway, that's what it's going to be. Somebody's still going to take Ed Oliver in the first round. It's entirely possible that scout who put that thing out there maybe just totally wanted to tank Ed Oliver's draft stock. Or maybe, just maybe, based on what you hear. Being a scout don't necessarily make you the authority that we act like it makes you. You know what I mean? Like, scouts be saying crazy stuff. I had somebody tell me that once. They're just like, yo, you can get any crazy coach you, quote, you want out of a scout. It's not that hard to do. But, oh, well, we can let a scout decide he knows a dude up and down and then tell everybody else about it, even though that scout might have an ulterior motive. And what do we call it? Draft journalism. All right, man, y'all been watching Jeopardy, Gabe. Do you watch Jeopardy?
I do not.
Okay. I haven't watched Jeopardy a lot recently. I was a bit of a Jeopardy prodigy when I was a youngster. I used to watch Jeopardy at the barbershop.
Wow.
Every day after school.
Okay.
People would legit come and watch me play Jeopardy when I was a kid.
Wow. All right.
I ain't got it like I used to, though, man. I be watching Jeopardy now, and I'm coming up sluggish. Like, I just don't have the skills that I did. I used to be like, yo, put me on Celebrity Jeopardy. Now I'm not so sure that I will win at Celebrity Jeopardy, and I ain't going on there to lose. Like, I'd really have to get myself in.
Like, start a campaign.
I'd have to get myself in marathon shape. You know what I mean? Like, if I was going to do that, I'd have to really, really get myself ready. Because, Gabe, you know damn well, there's a lot of people that think I would do well and that would be rooting for me. But it would be a whole lot more people, even for the people that was rooting for me, they would find it more noteworthy that I lost than they would find it that I won.
They would remember that.
They would still find that to be noteworthy. Like, the way that people view me, it would not be some huge surprise if I won. I mean, people have written stuff about their perceptions of how smart I am. You know what I mean? So it would just be like, oh, I thought you was the smartest guy in sports. You know, I once saw on Celebrity Jeopardy, the top two were Cheech Marin and Luke Perry. Rest in peace. You see what I'm saying? You never know who's going to come sneak up on you under these circumstances. So I need to, like, if I got myself into playing shape, I think I might have something for you on the Jeopardy. But I'm not in playing shape, and I know I'm not in playing shape because I'd be on here watching this cyborg. You seen the cyborg? Or have you heard about the cyborg?
I have not.
His name is James. I don't know anything else about him. Gabe, the dude, after last night, he had totaled, I think he's got 11 wins. Either way, $950,000. And what he's doing is he's going to the bottom of the board first instead of the top of the board, because what his program is, he want to stack as much bread as he can before he hits the daily doubles. And then he's doing crazy risky stuff on the daily doubles. But the thing about him and the crazy risk that he's playing on with the daily doubles is he has not found some flaw in the game theory that everyone else has been ignoring. No, he's just way better than everybody else. And since he's way better than everybody else, he is putting on the most ambitious daily double wagers that anybody has ever put up, because he know he ain't going to get it wrong. And by the way, by the time he gets most of these daily doubles, his pockets are so fat that he can risk $35,000 in a daily double, miss it, and still be up by 10 grand. Yeah. That's what he out here doing. He out here sending shout outs in the final Jeopardy screen. You know you got it right if you're doing that, because you can't be attaching nobody's name to losing. You know how mad I'd be if you gave me a shout out on a day that you lost? I don't know you. I knew you when you was a champion. I don't know you when you a loser. After like the ninth day, he sent a shout out to his grandma, and Alex Trebek was like, is she still here? And the dude was like, no. And he like looked up to the sky and like kissed his hand and pointed and said, this is for grandma. Hey man, I got news for you. If grandma saw you on day 9, that means grandma saw you on day 1 too. If you love your grandma so much, how the hell it take you 9 days to send her a shout out? You hadn't thought about that, Gabe, had you?
No, I hadn't.
I'd be offended if I was his grandma. You out here sending shout outs to these little girls you be hollering at. No. No, no, I ain't even send a shout out to your granny first. And but I had concluded, by the way, because I seen this happen before. So I participated in the Honda Campus All-Star Challenge. It's a trivia thing in college. I'm actually in the Honda Campus All-Star Challenge Hall of Fame, Gabe.
I did not know that.
Yes, yes, yes. I am in the, like, no lie. I am actually in the Hall of Fame. I was in the inaugural Hall of Fame class. Anyway, but as a competition among HBCUs, you know, black schools. And so you may not know this, Gabe, but West Virginia State University is an HBCU, but it is majority white.
I did not know that either.
It is historically black, but it is still in West Virginia, and West Virginia is something like 3% black. And I guess white folks in West Virginia must be poor for real, because they willing to go to the black people's school. Anyway, they would always have at West Virginia State, like, some dude, some white dude who was cold, cold in this competition. But they'd always have an Achilles heel. Whenever the white dudes would be at the competition killing it, they'd always have an Achilles heel. Black history. That would be it. That would be the whole black history, right? They ain't been doing that their whole lives, right? Black history would always be the white dude, like the hole in the white dude's game. Nah, man, I watched the cyborg last night. He was picking African countries off the map without them being identified. He had some other black people question that he got right. And I'm like, yo, man, this dude might be, like, he might be the perfect contestant. He's ready for everything. Like, I'm still not convinced he knows who Matthew Henson is. Black man went to the North Pole. Look up a picture of Matthew Henson. I want you to see that fly coat and that panky ring he got on. Oh, that was it. Ralph Ellison, the dude got the question about the Invisible Man. Now, I find that that's the Black History Month question that white people typically get. They teach that in y'all schools. But still, I was like, okay, I wasn't positive that he would be getting the question about Ralph Ellison and the Invisible Man. All right, way to go. I ain't even read the Invisible Man. Good for you. Big moves. This dude might play forever, man. Like, for real. This dude, like, he might never lose on Jeopardy. I don't know who the person is that is going to beat him on Jeopardy. He's like UCLA of Jeopardy. I don't know, like, is somebody out here training right now, getting their weight up, because they're going to take this dude out? He might walk out of there with $10 million. No lie. Like, this thing, if you have watched the cyborg play, no one has come any kind of close to him. Nobody. Although I will say yesterday, Gabe, this is how cold the cyborg is, right? Yesterday, somebody had like $2,000 and somebody had $4,000. I haven't seen anybody against him get that kind of money in the time that he's played. He's out here. Gabe, they not even making it out of Double Jeopardy. He out there doing Final Jeopardy with only one other person. You need to get on this. Like, I think you would appreciate this. Here's what it looks like. It looked like them pictures of Zion in high school.
Wow. What channel is Jeopardy on? Because I don't have cable.
Oh, yeah. Check your local listings. It's on, you know, one of your locals.
So, yeah, but I don't have local listings. I just got my Apple TV.
Oh, you ain't got no bunny ears?
Nah.
You need to get some bunny ears. Can you watch Jeopardy online?
You should be able to. I mean, if it's like ABC or NBC, what channel?
Well, it's syndicated.
Okay.
So it all depends on where you are. You're so millennial. I don't have local channels.
I got everything I need.
You ain't got no Jeopardy. By the way, a little factoid. In New York, Jeopardy comes on before Wheel of Fortune. Everywhere else I live, Wheel of Fortune came on before Jeopardy. And I got to say, man, it's a real drop off going from answering them Jeopardy questions to playing Hangman. This don't even feel right. Like it used to be you got warmed up with Wheel of Fortune, then to get to Jeopardy. Now you get off of Jeopardy, you'd be like, yo, I'm playing with children. We'll be back with the latest installment of our Baseline series on the Supermax contract with Bobby Marks, ESPN Front Office Insider. But first, the average interest rate on credit card debt is over 18% APR. Have you looked at your interest rate lately? Refinance your high-interest credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a rate as low as 6.14% APR with AutoPay. The rate is fixed. It'll never go up. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are no fees. Even get your money as soon as the day you apply. When you have good credit, you deserve great service and a low-interest, fixed-rate loan from LightStream. That's lending uncomplicated. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Bomani for more information. All right, we are coming up on our final installment of the Baseline series. We did this on the Supermax contract. Been good. Learned a lot about this. Had a lot of good guests. We had Michelle Roberts come on and talk about it. Brian Windhurst. Gabe, who else we have?
Bill Duffy.
That's
Super
right.
Agent.
Super Agent. That's right. And now to close this off, we've got former Nets executive. He's current ESPN front office insider on the NBA. His name is Bobby Marks, and here he is. Now, Bobby, we've been talking about the Supermax extension in the NBA. And for you working in the front office when they first brought this about, what were your thoughts on it?
The rise in salaries that we're going to see here. Bomani, I think when you look at how players are paid in their contracts, you usually get, three cracks of the apple, I say. You get the rookie scale contract, you get the rookie extension, and that third contract is usually the big one. And that's where some of these players like John Wall and, Steph Curry, players like that are, we're seeing $35, $36 million salaries. And how do you build out a team with a player like that on your roster here and what the back end of the contract is going to look like? I think, players like Russell Westbrook will be, 31, 32 years old, making north of $40 million. So I think it's more about the high cost of what that number is going to be. I understood the concept, but, I think there's some collateral damage with that also.
It also feels like with Steph Curry, it's one thing because you have a team that's always winning and you're keeping it together. And then a guy like John Wall, he's almost like Joe Johnson was with his contracts with the Hawks, where, okay, you guys aren't that good, but you're not good enough that you can afford to lose him, but you're also not good enough that keeping him is going to take you over the top, but now they're paying him $40 million a year.
Well, and in the Wall case too, and I think, we can talk about how the system is as far as what the criteria is. And for Wall, the year that he earned All NBA was the only year, and that's when he signed that extension in the summer of 2017. He was coming off 2016-17 where he earned All NBA. He was extension eligible because he met that criteria. That's the lone year here where maybe a player like Damian Lillard, for example, will earn NBA 2 out of the 3 years and now becomes extension eligible this summer here. So I think if anything, you can go back and when they negotiated the CBA, if you can maybe try to tweak the criteria to make it that if it's 2 years in a row or two out of 3 years for MVP. It's one out of 3 years here. I think that's something that, that teams would probably take a harder look at here, but I don't think they realize the mitigated consequences here as far as, especially if you're a front office and you have not done a good job of putting your roster together. And I think that's the case in Washington, where there's not an insurance policy when a player like John Wall gets hurt and you're stuck with that $40 to $42 million cap hit. You have not drafted well. You have a player like Bradley Beal who, you know, is making $25-30 million here that, you're basically stuck with that contract and you're kind of stuck in that in between period.
Now, could they have afforded to tell John Wall no on that contract?
They could have, and I think that comes down to having pretty strong principles within that front office. Do you have a belief to let John Wall go through the year and then go circle back with him the following year? The interesting thing, he wouldn't have been Supermax eligible. He would have left a lot of money on the plate. And does John Wall all of a sudden turn around and ask to be traded? So I think it's kind of you know, what your relationship with that player is, what your relationship with the agent is. Do you have a belief that you can afford going into a year when he can possibly walk and basically call his bluff here? So yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways that they could have gone about doing it. You know, I always call it the blank check route they went. They basically wrote him a blank check and they said, pick the number, pick the years here. And John picked the highest amount.
And now what do they do with Brad Beal potentially being eligible for something similar?
Well, that's the fascinating part is that does Bradley Beal become collateral damage because or scapegoat because of what the John Wall contract is right now? And we'll see what happens in, the next couple weeks here when all NBA is announced, does Bradley Beal get one of those last spots? And from what I understand before Ernie Grunfeld was let go is that, you know, if Beal did earn all NBA, that a 4-year, $190 million contract was going to be waiting there for him. And so now you have two players on a Supermax making your backcourt would have been $90 million in the summer of 2021. And that's hard to sustain here, unless you're San Antonio and you've got the young core of players and you draft well and you have that next layer of players kind of coming through the system.
Well, also, I think the next level with Wall and Beal is given their relationship, that's almost like kids. You can't give that to Wall and not give it to Beal.
Well, you're right. And I think that's what the issue that were the question that they'll have, this summer, whoever is in charge there, if it's Tommy Shepard or is their assistant GM or they hire, and on the outside is that Bradley Beal knows what John Wall earned 2 years ago. I mean, it's pretty out there and Bradley Beal knows and it's he's been pretty open about it that earning all NBA makes him Supermax eligible. And that comes with a 4-year, $190 million extension. Now it's just a matter of what will Washington offer to him.
Now, as somebody who is in the front office, you talk about like trying to build out around that team. How hard is it now to build around a team with a Supermax contract? Because I feel like one thing that happened with the Warriors with them being able to get all those guys in is it then forced everybody else to try to keep up without having the tools of the salary cap to do so.
Well, I think you're seeing it in Oklahoma City. I mean, the Westbrook contract where Russell is and then you add another player like Paul George is, you've got to hit it in the draft. You've got to draft right. You've got to, usually when you have a player making $38 million or in the case of Russ this year, $35 million, that is, you are in the luxury tax. So you are restricted. So the players that you go out and sign with your tax mid-level, the Patrick Pattersons of the world, those guys got to come in and produce. The first round draft picks, the Terrence Fergusons, what they do this year, in the draft, I call it bargain shopping and free agency, the minimum players. You've got to hit on that because if you don't, then that leaves you exposed. I think, Portland will be a fascinating situation because of, you know, we know Dame Lillard will be, Supermax eligible this summer. And can, you know, in that contract, I'm certainly will be there, but it goes back to as far as drafting well, signing guys to minimum contracts here, signing guys to the tax mid-level. And that's the belief of having a, you know, good, strong foundation in that front office.
Now, how do you think the Warriors look at all this right now? Because they've got Klay Thompson up this year, and then what I think will be the most fascinating decision to make on a player in a long time, which is what they do with Draymond Green coming into 1 year left on his deal.
Well, Draymond will be fascinating because he is supermax eligible if he earns all NBA. I don't think he will because that forward position is pretty deep here. Or defensive player of the year, and I don't think he'll get that, but he's basically walking into a year, a contract year, an expiring contract. And I think what happens with, Durant, what happens with Klay, certainly the likelihood is that Klay stays, will impact with what happens with Draymond. And usually the one benefit of the Supermax is that once a player is eligible or hits the criteria, you have an idea of where you're going here. Either that player is going to sign that number, like we saw with John Wall and James Harden and Westbrook, or they're going to turn down that number, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, and that basically forces the hand of that team here. That's not the case with Golden State with Draymond because he won't meet that criteria, and you're basically treating it as a player on an expiring contract as far as is he part of the future, or do you kind of look to see what the market's going to be for him?
And the overall tricky thing I think they have also is how many players can you have that the owner likes more than the coach?
Well, I think the one thing that the one benefit they have is that they're going into a brand new arena. And the cost of what that payroll could be, I think we're looking probably over $300 million if that whole group comes back with tax and salary will be offset as far as basically that revenue. But what I learned was in New Jersey, the 1 year we had our luxury tax, I think it was $92 million in luxury tax, $100 million in payroll, which is I think still the highest, is that although you might have a billionaire owner, and a guy makes a lot of money, that it's an uncomfortable feeling the first week of August when you have to wire the NBA $90 million.
Oh, you have to do it at once.
You have to do it. This is not a, you're not paying for college. You're not paying on the first and or the 15th of the month here. You are paying at once. They give you that wire instructions and it's not a good feeling there. I don't care how much money you make.
Whose job is it to go tell Progorov that we got to do this?
In mine, I would get the notice, and then I'd walk into Billy King's office and say, here you go. Here's the date when it's due by. And the crazy part was, too, is that, I mean, going back to that year, is that we had an opportunity to trade for Jordan Hill, who was playing for the Lakers at that time, and it would have cost us like another $20 million for 3 months. And our ownership group was like, yeah, go ahead, go out and get him if you want. And we're like, God almighty, how many more guys do we need here? Like we already were like 14 deep and we couldn't find playing time for Kirilenko and Andre Blotch and that group here. But yeah, and I think that's why you're seeing teams, with Miami, recently Houston duck under that luxury tax because teams don't want to pay it if it's $1 million or if it's $30 million.
Now, switch gears just a little bit. I want to ask you about Giannis because he's due for the richest contract in NBA history, or he could sign that with Milwaukee next summer. And he seems like he really enjoys it in Milwaukee, but how hard would it then be for them to keep a team built around him?
Well, the fortunate thing is that Giannis is not, he'll be Supermax eligible, but can't sign it until, summer 2020, 5 years, 251. I think that's kind of where that number is going to be, right around there. Their key free agents are going to be this summer. So you've got Chris Middleton, you've got Malcolm Brogdon, you've got Brooke Lopez, players like that. You already did the Bledsoe extension during the year. So yeah, I mean, they'll be able to stay under the luxury tax this year, but that number is that's coming. That's coming for them the summer of 2020 when Giannis is up. So they do get some breathing room right now going into next year, but it's another team that's got a new building, but it's also one of those mid-market teams. So can you pay a guy $45 million and still have a highly competitive roster? And I think that's kind of where we're probably looking at it from a perspective of Milwaukee. They'll be pretty similar to where maybe Portland is. Portland with Lillard, with McCollum, you still have Nurkic, players like that as far as, building that roster out.
How big a deal is the tax for those smaller markets?
It's a big deal. It's a big deal because you look at it, you don't get a tax distribution, so you're not getting money back. Teams this year get about $3 million in tax distribution. It's a big deal because we see Oklahoma City in that repeater tax right now where it's 4 out of 5 years. If you're in there, basically the cost gets doubled. So if you are paying, $25 million in tax for the Thunder, maybe $50 million. So there's a lot of restrictions as far as how you build out the roster. I think not receiving that tax distribution is big for some of the smaller market teams. But on the other hand, there also is the revenue sharing. So it's maybe what you lose, you can get back here. But yeah, we never see teams like Charlotte, and that's another team. Charlotte's going to be fascinating this summer. You know, what happens if Kemba Walker earns all NBA? He's supermax eligible. Can you pay him 5 years, $221 million, and basically bring that same roster? Michael Jordan's never paid the luxury tax. You know, never has, you know,
the most Michael Jordan
never,
thing ever.
Has never done it. And will he do it? And if he will, you're basically paying it for probably a 40 win team at best, just because the same pieces come back.
Like, how hard do you think it'll be down the line to trade some of these guys that have this contract?
I think it's nearly, and I don't want to say impossible. I think any player is tradable. I think the Wall contract is untradeable because of the Achilles injury. But, you know, I wrote up Oklahoma City for when they get eliminated here, if it's against Portland in game 5. And that's one of the questions I asked about Russell Westbrook. You know, here's a player that's owed 4 years, $170 million. I understand he's the face of the franchise. I understand he's never entered free agency since he was drafted in 2008. He was the big part of why Paul George committed. He's an all-star here. But, you know, what happens if the Thunder all of a sudden say, you know what, we need to overhaul the roster here. Russell is the guy that we're going to look from a trade standpoint. Can you get equal value back? And I'm not certain you can. Can you get draft picks back? You certainly can, based on where this year is shaking up to be. Maybe a team like Phoenix possibly, but those are big numbers, you know, especially when you have to match salaries in most cases, unless that player goes into cap space. So, a guy making $40 million in on a roster, I think that scares off teams.
Let me ask you this. As an uninvested observer, how excited are you for the start of free agency this summer?
I'm one of those guys when the commissioner talks about it or Kevin Durant talks about it, where we kind of thrive on the chaos of uncertainty. I love the chaos of uncertainty. And I think why I'm looking forward to this summer is because there's going to be a big drop off, in the summer of 2020. I think where we're looking at with this year, with the impact, with the number one, who gets the number one pick starting May 14th, if it's New York, or what the value of Zion Williamson is, and then Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Kemba Walker, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, all both New York and LA teams having cap space. That's a great storyline. But then you look at AD and Draymond and a lot of restricted guys like Ben Simmons who can get extensions this summer, and guys like DeMar DeRozan. So there is a little bit of a drop off. And I think what teams do this summer will certainly set up for, you know, where they are in the future here.
Yeah. I think the point about both LA and New York teams is interesting, because this is the first time I feel like in our collective lifetimes that the fact that the Nets and the Clippers have space, it means something different now than it ever has.
Well, and it's funny too, is that you would probably, if you ranked where those four organizations are as far as a desirable place right now, based on the infrastructure in LA, with the Clippers, the management, coaching in Brooklyn, you'd probably rank those teams ahead of the Lakers and the Knicks. And we probably couldn't say that, 6 or 7 years ago, in the summer of 2010, when we saw the big, you know, all those free agents out there again. So, yeah, that's the fascinating thing, is that the little brother in those two places are now kind of in the pecking order.
Last thing for you. Do you have a Kevin Durant guess? Are you willing to try to guess what in the world goes through Kevin Durant's mind?
I can't read Kevin Durant. Probably as much as I can't read Kawhi Leonard as far as there. So it's interesting. Does he get to a point where that winning, I call it winning fatigue, where you basically go through 3 years of winning championships where you said, hey, I've already accomplished enough. Here is where I want to go to my next challenge. And I think New York is the ultimate challenge here. This is not Golden State. This is not even LeBron going to the Lakers, where you had Kuzma and Ingram and Lonzo Ball there and cap space to, you know, to add another piece here. You were going into a New York team that basically has an expansion roster here, and maybe that changes if there's somebody else coming with him.
All right, that is Bobby Marks, ESPN front office insider for the NBA. Thanks so much, my man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Unblock me, Bo.
You know Bomani Jones is not shy about blocking on Twitter. The Right Time team recognizes we all slip up, so Bo will give one lucky follower an opportunity to make amends. It's Unblock Me, Bo.
All right, Bo. We got a pretty unique one here today. We've got two friends, or supposed friends. We're not sure exactly how close they are, but they seem pretty close if they're sticking up for one another. We got our man Danny in Toronto and our man AP in Toronto at DGS0723 on Twitter and at SnoopAVP on Twitter.
Okay.
So the original offense comes from our man AVP, who said it would be really nice one day to read something by Jason. He's referring to Jason Lockenfora. That doesn't focus on race. He's talking about a Josh Freeman piece.
Mm-hmm.
He's also wildly inconsistent throwing the ball over behind receivers and bad footwork when pressure comes. Do you remember what your conversation was about when it came to Josh Freeman, or what your thoughts on Josh Freeman were at the time?
It depends on what year.
This goes back to 2014.
Huh. 2014, that sounds like when he was getting run out at Tampa Bay.
Sounds like it, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he had one of the worst games ever, his one game back. But, I mean, I had questions about Freeman, but I thought Greg Schiano was treating him bad. That is my recollection. But help me help you. What we got?
That is correct. And then what happened was he blocked this guy. And then his friend, Danny, proceeds to start a campaign. This extends over many years, all the way from 2014. Start a campaign to get his man, AP, unblocked. Come on, Bo, unblock the man. He's a UNC fan, too. Still heartbroken from Monday, and he's a Niners fan. He's also thanking Bruce Arthur. Thanks, Bruce. Would love to know why Bo blocked me. I don't even have a dog, Avi.
Okay.
Bo, dude, unblock us both, yo. You block me on Twitter. Straight waste a man's time. But then he's also wilding out on a couple other things, like it, saying that ESPN was stupid to have hired you.
Oh, word?
Yes, because after all, he said that you claimed that no one cares about the Olympics.
It was the Winter Olympics, a.k.a. the Whiter Olympics.
Ooh, congrats, Bo. You've joined the elite company of at real Skip Bayless. Hashtag idiot.
That's the guy that was sticking up for the guy.
This is the guy that was sticking up for the guy, yes. So I guess I couldn't, like, directly connect whether or not him throwing these haymakers over the years was post-blocking or pre-blocking, because he's still tweeting at you even though he's been blocked by you. There's like another thing that you tweeted out, by the way. I'm a pretty big fan of the Canada I know, by the way. Range of reasons why, but Toronto was great to me. No need to lie, though, you know? There's a picture of former Mayor Rob Ford, and he said, "Our cops actually serve and protect. Don't shoot first. Ask questions later." Lots of things going on here. Lots of things going on here. Your thoughts?
I can tell from right now, it doesn't sound like the first guy really did that much. Right. He did sound like a lazy, "don't be talking about race" guy, you know, and I ain't really got time to hear that. That meant it was only a matter of time before he said something else stupid. So it was probably a good idea for me to get him up out of there. But that other dude, he did it to himself.
Shall we get our man on the phone?
Yeah. Yeah. The first guy gets to come back. The other guy. Yeah. Okay.
Hello.
Hey, this is Bomani. What's going on, man?
What's going on, bro?
You gonna call me an idiot now?
Call you what?
You gonna call me an idiot now? Gabe, you called me an idiot, right?
I didn't call you that. You blocked my boy, so I just said, why'd you block him for?
Gabe, read it, read it.
Okay.
Read what? The tweet?
Congrats, Bomani Jones. You've joined the elite company of at real Skip Bayless. Hashtag idiot.
You got that thing he said about when I got me a job? What did he say then?
I don't even recall that tweet.
ESPN, you're pretty stupid to have hired Bomani Jones. After all, he claims no one cares about the Olympics.
I just want to know if you're going to call me an idiot now.
Nah, that wasn't my tweet, though.
Word?
Word.
Gabe?
But I did peep you at Cleveland Dirt, and I was like, yo, why'd you block me for? And you just walk right back.
Gabe, he say he didn't do it, but you got it in front of you.
I got Danny Singh at DGS 0723, the 23rd of February, 2014.
Oh, wow, that was real far back. I probably did say it.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to say this. You're a good friend because you got your friend unblocked. We're going to call him, and we're going to unblock him. So I just wanted to tell you that you are a great friend and apparently not trying to call me an idiot no more. I see how it is.
We put that aside.
Yeah, no. I ain't put it aside. You just up out of here. Gabe, hang up. Let's talk to the guy that gets unblocked.
Hello.
Hey, this is Bomani, man. How are you?
Hey, Bo. How you doing?
Doing all right, man. I got to say, I ain't really so much like your initial tweet in our exchange, but I realize I may have overreacted a bit in blocking you. And so we gonna bring you back around.
Nice. Yeah, you know, that was a long time ago and stuff like that. But I look forward to the show every week and everything like that. So, you know, it's a long time ago. I just want to get all the content now. I'm happy to be unblocked.
I appreciate it. Your homeboy, though, he's in the dark for that.
He did say that how he wasn't getting unblocked.
Yeah, he's staying there forever. And I'm going to tell you this, that just so you know, he is a good friend because he made a fool of himself in such a way that guaranteed that you would come back and that he would stay in the darkness forever. And I wouldn't have done that for you if I was him. So, like, take him out to eat or something.
I got to take him out.
Yeah, so I appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care, buddy.
Yes, sir. See? There we go, Gabe, out here making dreams come true. I can't believe people submit to this, by the way.
So here's the thing about that guy. I mean, he literally forgot that he sent those tweets. There are receipts to this thing. Like, I'm literally, like, in my hand. I got them. Don't be half-stepping. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
What do you think about the guy saying that he saw you at the Clevelander?
Yeah.
You ghosted him, huh?
I don't know. I'm sure if I knew he was speaking to me, I would have spoken to him.
How many times do you get people coming up to you saying, please unblock me?
It doesn't happen much, and it's never worked.
Do you hold these people in the same realm as people just coming up to you trying to take a picture? When they come up to you asking to get unblocked.
Now, I'm pretty nice to the people that want to take pictures. But you ask me to, the thing I say to people when they ask to be unblocked, the first thing I say is, what'd you say? And I can tell in their reaction whether they should get unblocked or not.
And so we don't remember this guy at all?
Hell no. Hey, you know, this happens a lot, man. Like, you're gonna need to be, and does it sound to you like he talked to me? It sounds like I walked past and he asked to be unblocked and I just kept on going.
Keep it moving.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly because the way he said his boy, he knew he should have been blocked.
So the inspiration for this was after the last one, I had a ton of people reaching out directly to me saying, please unblock me, unblock me, unblock me, unblock me. I responded with the gif, our man from The Wire, come at the king, you best not miss.
Yes.
And sure enough, this guy shooting blanks today. And also forgetting originally what he said. So
yes. Oh, well, welcome back. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank to our sponsor, Lightstream. Thanks to our Unblock Me candidates. I've already forgotten their names, but one of them is back and the other one will stay in the darkness forever. And thank you to Bobby Marks. That's the conclusion of our baseline series on the Supermax. We appreciate his perspective on it as a former executive. Be sure to check out the Mediacom show. It's draft week. And before heading to Nashville, Mina and Lenny, the star of the new ESPN commercial, chat with my buddy Dominique Foxworth about the needs and possible strategies of the teams in the top six. Cardinals, 49ers, Jets, Raiders, Bucks, and Giants. Subscribe to her show and ours on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.